Okay, here we go. Show's done for the fall. Thank God, couldn't take no more.
Welcome to our Star Trek Discovery Recap Freakcast. I am your host, Anita Sarkeesian, and I'm joined by the delightful, delirious...
Ooh, that's good. Yeah.
Amazing.
Ebony Astra.
I'm trying to do D's. What other... Delicious? No, that's
no. Oh, that's not good. Dynamite. No. Dynamite!
Yeah, good, good. What's up, Ebony?
What's up, Anita? I am chilling in the recording closet, otherwise known as the Fortress of Solitude, ready to drop some knowledge on the people.
I am still in Sweden, but I am in a different part of Sweden.
Listen to this.
At a different game studio. This time I'm in Massive at Malmö. That's nice of them to let me use some recording space here.
Yeah, it really is. But you know what? Whatever with your world traveling. I'm sitting here in a closet in Southern California, crying in the Kool-Aid about my life.
Come to Sweden with me. I told you.
You
to
got
come with me.
You got that come to Sweden money, because otherwise I don't know how that was gonna work.
We'll figure it out next time.
Sweden doesn't take gift certificates. That's all I got. A drawer full of gift cards.
Do you have a Subway gift certificate?
You mean like Subway sandwiches or like public transit?
Like sandwiches, can you get a gift certificate for public transit?
Yeah, I think you could buy like a travel card for someone, right? I don't know. Someone help me out here. But no,
yeah.
Subway sandwiches, why would I eat that Jim Matt
I don't know.
Mayonnaise.
It's the first thing that came to mind.
Just fake alien meat ass stuff. I have some respect for myself. A small amount, but some.
Fair. All right. So that was exciting and interesting. Good podcast.
Was it? Oh, yeah. God. We're killing it.
It's not.
You know what's really great about this is that this is our final podcast on Star Trek Discovery anyway.
But for the final.
Yeah, exactly. For the, because of the fall finale. And I love that we're going to go on a small hiatus with this absolutely quality content. I can't believe this shit is free. Y'all should be dropping some tips in the tip jar for this stuff.
I mean, actually, let's do that. Let's do a little plug. It would be great. We run on, Feminist Frequency runs on donations, and we like to keep our shit free for everybody. But if you like what you hear and you have a couple bucks, feel free to go to feministfrequency.com/donate and help us out.
Yeah, or if you don't like what you hear and you would like to direct the content and the pacing and the rhythm of the show, we can be bought. We have a price. So float a number.
This is why Ebony is not in charge.
This is why?
Yeah, this
That's
is why.
Not what I was told. Anyway.
So we are, episode 9 is the end of the first half of Star Trek Discovery. Starting January 7th, there will be another 6 episodes in the first season. That goes until February 11th. And I was just reading an article to figure out what those dates were. And it said, fortunately, the hiatus isn't very long. And I'm like, fortunately, shit. I thought it was going to be longer than that.
Me too.
Unfortunately.
Although I have to say, I've gotten into the rhythm of watching Discovery on a Sunday night, recording this podcast, and it's become such, I don't want to say a highlight of my week, but such a moment of I'm going to do this and I'm going to get so riled up, that I there's a small part of me that looks forward to it. So I am worried about the hiatus. I don't know what I'm going to watch instead. Because Doctor Who has love,
Yeah.
Although I think I'm worried about the new Doctor Who, not because it's a new Doctor, obviously not because the Doctor is a woman, and definitely not because Stephen Moffat is no longer the showrunner. That is only a cause for celebration in my house. But I'm just worried because, I fear change. And
Fair. I'm sure our listeners would be happy to recommend a bunch of crap to you.
Yeah, do. Hey, at Ebony Aster. Hit me up. Tell me about some stuff I should be watching. Bonus points for things that, you know, I can binge. So movies are great, but if it's a TV show that's got like 4 or 5 or more smooth seasons that I can be watching, you know, with one eye as I do the dishes, thumbs up to those recommendations. Hit me up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I would just like to, before we begin, I would like to give a shout out to Bodie Wolf, who is very upset that they are not one of the three listeners, even though they listen every week. And I wanted to say, I'm very sorry. We see you. We love you. We know you come to our Twitch streams. This is all Ebony's fault.
Yeah, well, that's generally true, no matter the context. I think of Bodie Wolf less as a listener and more like a silent producer in my head. Because I feel like,
interesting,
you know,
it's an like, interesting choice.
Like they're just there in the booth.
Your headcanon, you know, is real special.
I have a very, very rich, very nuanced monologue going on in my brain at all times. But also, shout out to Bodie Wolf, because I put out a request to have someone Photoshop Henrik Hansen's from Holby City's head onto Loki's body from Thor Ragnarok. Bodie's the only one that came through. So the rest of y'all can step off. Yeah.
Rad.
Well, you wouldn't, because it's bullshit. You know, like, why would anyone be interested in this?
I probably
But Bodie Wolf is the only one who came through for me. So Bodie is my ride or die. The rest of y'all, come on up with the, when I have a Photoshop request, I'm being totally A-plus serious.
Ebony's never being serious. On that note.
Yeah. Let's get into it.
So episode 9 is called Into the Forest I Go. That is English for going into a forest.
What?
In case you needed to look that up, because we don't understand the goddamn titles and what they mean on this stupid show.
Well, listen, I look this up. I joke every week about the fact that I do absolutely zero prep for this podcast because I'm a professional. But anyways, I looked this up and found out that Into the Forest I Go is part of a larger quote from John Muir, who is a naturalist.
Lord, it's always something.
Right, but no, I love it because the full quote is, you know, into the forest I go to lose my mind and find my soul. And I was like, that is so apposite for this show, because I do lose my mind at every episode, you know. But I think, you know, it's obviously like its most clear reference is to Stamets, right? You know, as he goes off into the uncharted frontier of the mycelium space, and just, I don't know, they kept talking about white matter, and I was like, for real. Anyway. But anyway, so that's what that's a reference to.
Sorry.
We caught it. John Muir, right on. Let's keep it moving.
Cool. Yeah. All right. So, this episode. Okay. You know, it was, I have no strong feelings one way or another. It was fine. I think it was fine. Like, I think there was actually moments that I genuinely cared, which is super
Give me
weird,
one.
But,
Name
well,
one.
I can name one this time. So there were two. There's two. I can only remember one. But some of the PTSD stuff I thought was interesting until it wasn't. But hold on. Let's come back to that.
Okay.
Okay. So we are at. So one of the other things I've learned from Twitter is that a lot of our listeners don't actually watch the show, but they just listen to our podcast.
I know. I find that hilarious. I find that absolutely hilarious. I also feel like we're doing a little bit like, come on, people. If we got to sit through this stuff, someone else should have to do this, too.
I'm sure a lot of people are actually sitting through it, but I feel like now I'm like, oh, we have to give more context. I don't think we need to. But anyways, this is like the end of, so this was almost felt like a two-parter episode, right? Continuing on from the previous episode.
Yeah, I actually did expect that it was going to turn out to be a 2-hour special episode. And so when it wasn't, I was grateful. But also I did feel like I felt curiously unmoved at the end. I shouldn't say curiously, because this whole season has left me unmoved, but I thought, wow, at the end I should feel some kind of way about this, either really excited to find out what's going to happen, you know, really upset at, you know, what I fear might happen, really excited about, you know, the heroism. But I just once again felt nothing. That may be a personal failing, I don't know, but at the end of the hour I was like, huh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely moments that I got into it a little bit. I don't know. We're Stockholm syndromed, right? Like, mm-hmm. this is where we're at. But mm-hmm. so just for some context, in the last episode, they go to this world and they meet these Pavans, and they're there to try and get ability to help them figure out the cloaking technology or detect the cloaking technology of the Klingons. And there's this. And so when they go there and they say, help us, the Pavans are like, all right. And so there's this narrative here. There's this narrative here that really pisses me off, because what they did is they're like, we want to bring these two parties together and help them find peace together. Right. Which is mm-hmm. not a bad thing.
Right.
But the whole story here is that, oh, they're too dumb to know that the Klingons are bad and that we are good.
Right.
Right. And so this whole
incredibly
idea
paternalistic.
Of like,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And the whole idea of, like, this strange planet of strange aliens is going to know that you're on the good side of this. Like, if the Klingons went to them for help, then, you know, like, it's just so fucking stupid. And I was sitting there being like, this is so irritating. And then, oh, look, they were right.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's that line where the Klingons show up to the planet and say, let's destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a cycle of, like, the narrative, the like warmongering, the sort of imperialist narrative just reverberating, right? Like they do things to justify their own existence in this space, which is really disappointing.
Yeah. No, it's part of a long line of like this narrative trope whereby no matter what bad actions the, you know, quote unquote good guys engage in, they're still good guys. Like there's some innate, you know, abstract quality of goodness that we're supposed to subscribe to. And no matter how many good actions the bad guys engage in, they are bad. So it doesn't matter that our motivations, you know, between the good guys and the bad guys might be exactly the same. We are supposed to identify, you know, and admire Starfleet. So even though, yeah, they would ultimately be just as rapacious and manipulative of the Pavans as the Klingons would be, we're supposed to assume that ultimately there's a higher good that they represent. And it's like, no, you haven't proved that, you know? I think there's several episodes like this across the various franchise series. But, you know, there are several in the original series as well. And it plays out in exactly the same way. You know, like, essentially, yeah, this very, you know, patronizing, you know, pat on the head, foreign civilization, alien civilization, just trust us. Ultimately, it all comes down to just trust us.
Yeah. Yeah. And why? And like, I think that those are elements that are just, you take for granted when you watch media, right? Like you just, cause that's the emotion that these stories are trying to strike with you. So as the audience, generally you're like, yeah, totally. Like how dare they do this thing and not know, but really we need to step back and be like, wait a second. Like let's interrogate what's good and what's bad and what the values are of this story. Yeah. My choice Lorca line for the episode is, you want me to run from a fight?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
I was just going to say my choice Lorca line was, you're not just a scientist.
Yeah.
You're an explorer. And I was like, Lorca,
oh, no. Hold on.
Manipulative shit.
Hold on. It is, you were polite scientists, you are now fierce warriors.
Oh no, that came later. We got both.
Oh.
And I was like, when he said that, I was like, I actually would like more polite scientists.
Oh, he said
thank
that
you.
To Stamets.
Yeah,
right,
he said it
to
Stamets.
Right.
And when I was like, he's manipulating Stamets into going ahead with this just insane, you know, plan to do 133 jumps. And he's like, you're not just a scientist, you're an explorer, blah blah blah, I'm a manipulative jerk, I'm a bad captain.
Yeah.
And I was just like, no.
Yeah, so like the A plot is basically that Burnham and Tyler are gonna go into the Klingon ship and put some devices in. Which, can we talk about how those devices are fucking huge and loud and colorful?
Thank you. I was like, this seems wildly inconvenient that when you turn on this thing that's supposed to be like, you know, surreptitious, that it goes loudly. Ready for uplink to Discovery.
Yeah,
it's bright blue, and it's like the size of a toddler. I don't think you thought this through.
Oh my God. I was like, come on, whatever. There's also a moment where on the when the captain, Lorca doesn't want Burnham to be a part of the away mission. Mm-mm. And Burnham goes off to the captain in front of everybody on the bridge crew and is like, yeah, you need to have me, blah, 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 blah. And obviously she's going to go on. But like, you would never get away with that. Like, no other
character. Why not? Why not? This ship is so bananas. You know,
Lorca,
why not?
Would never stand for it.
Nothing means anything on that ship.
But this is the thing, is it's purely to throw in some, like, drama to this stupid thing that doesn't even need to happen. Because, like, or sorry, that was not at all what I was trying to say. Mm-hmm. Like, you wouldn't talk like that to a superior officer. And Lorca is so stubborn and pigheaded that he would never, like, show that other people could talk to him that way and get away with it. So it's that kind of shit that I'm like, oh, my God, stop being so inconsistent here.
Right.
It's minor, but it still annoyed me.
I don't think it is minor, because I think, yeah, this is the kind of thing where, you know, you would expect, especially someone like Burnham, who's kind of dyed in the wool, you know, like, you know, her background with the Vulcans, and, you know, and being like propriety, she would say, Captain, can I see you in your ready room? Which, oh my God, if we see Lorca root around in that bowl of fortune cookies one more goddamn time,
oh my God,
I'm going to seriously drive to the Paramount lot, because I cannot take it.
How stale are those goddamn fortune cookies?
Also, what is that? Like, dude, I kind of love that it's fortune cookies, because as far as I know, I could be wrong, correct me, at Ebony Astor, but as far as I know, fortune cookies are like this made up American thing, right? You know, like, this is not something that you would find if you went to China, you know, like, this is something created by Chinese Americans, but in response to, you know, kind of an American, you know, desire, right? Like, it was a kind of a novelty thing that kind of took off. So I kind of love that that's what his family is known for, this bullshit ersatz, you know, kind of Chinese thing. But also the fact that he roots around in them constantly, I just find it so irritating. That
does
and
he, like,
the eye
offer
drops.
It to other, does he offer
this
it
is
to
what
other
I'm wondering,
people?
You know, like those,
like,
cootie ass fortune cookies. Yes. You know, and I mean, it would be one thing if we actually saw him eat one. For some reason, that would make it better for me if he was like, yeah, this is just, you know, like, this is the kind of snack I like.
Before bed. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, if it was Obama, it'd be a handful of almonds. It's Lorca. It's a handful of fortune cookies. But he just roots in there and then crushes them up. And it just, it sets me off.
Yeah, it's dumb. I do think that I appreciate the eye drops, because every week I'm like, what happened to the fact that he has this disability? Like, it's just they drop it in when it's convenient. And I appreciate that they do little nods to, like, this affects his life on a daily basis.
Right.
So I appreciate that. And I appreciate that it was done in an episode that had nothing to do with his eyesight, that it was just, like, a part of who this character is.
Right. No, so I appreciate that. It's purely the way that it's done. Like, just that little bottle of Visine for what I just, I'm like, it's you know, like, he's getting the same bottle of IsoClear at CVS that I'm using. It just seems like, I don't know, there'd be something a little bit more advanced in eye drop technology. And also, it just seems like, you know, maybe he smoked up a little bit and he's trying to get rid of the red eye. I don't know.
I mean, God, if he got high, he'd probably be so much cooler. I'm just saying. He'd chill out a little bit.
No, I feel like he would be that guy that you'd be like, if you don't shut up with your, you know, philosophy 101 freshman seminar, you know,
yes,
realizations,
you're right.
Like, we don't need it. Anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. So the sort of B plot of this episode is that it is really around Stamets and the fact that he is the human spore drive guy.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some questions.
I bet I don't have answers.
You probably don't. Nobody has any answers. But first of all, so they're all so he's trying to stall. Lorca's trying to stall because they're supposed to leave and not protect the Pavins that they are committed to, blah, blah, blah. And so they're like, find a reason to stall. Like, is there something happening? And Stamets is like, oh, the implants are itchy. Go to sick bay and get a whole diagnostics, which he's like, oh, shit, I'm actually broken. This is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like, Starfleet knows that they're using a human and they're okay with that. Like, I thought that was a secret.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Starfleet knew, but my question is the idea that Stamets was going to go get a complete medical workup. you know, obviously disturbed him because he didn't want to reveal, you know, the changes that he'd been experiencing. But I'm like, okay, so you've been doing this. Why hasn't Lorca been demanding, like, constant surveillance of your medical, like, I can't imagine that this has been going on and Lorca has been like, you know, yeah, okay, that's cool. I'm sure it's fine, you know, with no oversight this whole time. Are you kidding me?
I mean, I'm of two minds of that. One is I could see that totally happening. But also, if Lorca did it, he should be doing it only to protect his asset.
Yeah.
Right.
Like
that would not because he actually gives a shit about any other human in the world.
Right.
But so, okay, my other question here is that Lorca is basically, like you were saying, he's really manipulative. He's basically asking Stamets to kill himself in order to, you know, like he's manipulating with him with like, I've been tracking your jumps and we're finding these alternative universes and answering these, like, potentially opening up these larger questions about like the wider universe and exploration and all this shit. But I do not understand the science behind. Like, sorry, how do we go from it's going to take days to compile the data that we need from these giant toddler devices to if we just do 146 jumps or however many it is, we can do it in like 10 minutes. Like, what? Listen,
I have many more scientific questions, starting with, okay, the Klingons have this cloaking technology that Starfleet
which they
has
got
not
from
been able
Starfleet?
To crack. Yeah, so they have
didn't they
Starfleet
get it?
Has not been able to crack it over weeks and months and whatever.
Hold on, but didn't they get the technology from Starfleet? Or does Starfleet not have cloaking technology?
No, Starfleet does not have cloaking technology.
Okay.
So Starfleet, like the collective finest minds in Starfleet have been racking their brains trying to figure out how to unpack cloaking technology, right? For however long they've understood it to exist. And then Saru and Burnham crack it in 2 hours.
Yeah, clearly.
Just like, I was like, that's pretty fucking convenient, guys. Like, that's real nice that you were able to
not
come
guys.
Up with this.
Not guys.
Oh, that's right.
Not guys. Yeah.
It's really convenient, folks.
Ebony's like, working on trying to not say guys too much,
I have
to call
and
her
also,
out.
Yeah, please do call me out because it's one of the, well, many things, but one of the things that, like, I'm having a hard time breaking that kind of unconscious use of guys to mean everyone of any gender, no gender identity, whatever. And I'm trying to break myself of it, so call me out on it. But yeah, I was just like, give me a flipping break, you know? Starfleet hasn't been able to figure this out, but you two chuckleheads figured it out in 2 hours, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I also have a question about the science of them beaming onto the Klingon ship. And this might be stupid. And I hope someone will tell me how this works. How is it that they could just beam onto an enemy vessel? It seems like there would be some kind of security protocol to prevent people from just beaming willy-nilly onto other vessels. And I get that the shields were down, right? But how does it happen that people aren't just constantly, you know, beaming onto other ships if all it takes is for the shields to be down?
And
does
like,
that make sense?
Beamed
I was
onto,
just like,
I didn't even think about that, but it's the most obvious question. And like, if someone beamed onto Discovery, they would know that there's like an intruder alert or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It would seem like, you know, like maybe there would be some kind of, I don't know, fail safe so that not just any jackball could beam onto your ship. And I would assume that the Klingons would have that. I don't know. It just that drove me nuts.
I really like jackball. That's a good one.
Yeah, I got that from my friend Todd. One. Okay, here's my last. Well, probably not. But here's another scientific question: when the Klingons are cloaked, and Discovery is doing those 133 jumps, if they don't yet know where the Klingons are, how do they know they won't try and jump into already occupied space? You see what I'm saying? Like, how do they know that they won't try and, like, jump into the space that the Klingon ship already occupies? How does that work?
Oh, I have no fucking idea.
Right. And if they, if there's some reason why the computer will be like, oh yeah, I can't, you know, I can't warp into that space. There's something already there. Wouldn't that then tell them, oh, that's where the Klingon ship is, you know?
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
I got questions.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to host a Science of Star Trek show.
Ooh, me too.
And, like, actually try to figure this shit out. Not that we could do it, but, like, you know, with people. Anyways. Okay, one thing that annoyed the crap out of me this whole episode was Stamets' weepy face.
Anita, it was don't
really
go
bad.
Down that. Don't be like me.
No.
Don't
not.
Be like me.
Look. Oh wow, sorry. That was probably a giant bang on my end. I'm sorry, but I was having such a hard time. There were moments that I actually really cared for Stamets. Like, this is an episode in which I was like, this shit is fucked up and I feel for you. Like, when he's talking to Ricky, I finally learned Ricky's name is Hugh Calbert.
Is it Calbert or Culber?
Oh, fuck.
We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
I spelled it wrong. Hugh. His name is Hugh. That's okay. Cool. At least I got his first name right.
Mm-hmm.
But when he's like, hey, I want to go to this opera. I'm going to take you to this opera thing. And I hate opera, but I love you. And we'll be together and we'll do this thing. And I was like, that's really cute and sweet. And I really liked that. Right. And then when Lorca was being like, there were just moments that I really felt for him. And then there were other moments that I was like, can you just not, like, can you be a little more subtle in your expressions? Because it's really getting to me.
Right.
But I think it's also in contrast because Lorca, oh my God, why did I just blank on the name of the actor who plays Lorca?
Jason Isaacs?
Yes, thank you. Jason, again, I will reiterate, I think Jason Isaacs is one of the best actors on the show, even if I hate his character. And the moment when they say, that the Admiral is not dead and the Admiral is back on the ship, his facial expression was so subtle, but it was so there, right? Like, I felt that. I felt his concern and worry and was like, God damn it, this guy's a really good actor, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just this comparison between, like, the staleness and the over-the-topness of some of the other actors on the show because they're not given material that's good enough to work with, and they might not be as seasoned actors to be able to take really shit material and turn it into something useful. Yeah. So that, like, that comparison that was just a thing I noticed. But it was I really genuinely felt for Stamets, and I think that this is a really interesting storyline in terms of, like, you are being manipulated by this fucking piece of shit tool that's saying, like, you are the only person that can help save us and all this shit. And so when you see that, you see at the end when it's like, you know, they're sitting on that, like, that shot of them, like, looking over the entire space, whatever. And he's like, I'll do one more jump to, like, protect everyone and to get everyone home and all this shit. You're just like, oh, my God, he's going to die. And I felt so, like, no. Like, I legitimately was like, don't kill Stamets, which, what the fuck?
I know. You know, when it became clear that it was going to go badly for Stamets, I was like, this dude is not going to make it, and the public is going to blame me because I have been calling for his removal from the show for so long, even though I just wanted him to get lost in a Jeffrey's tube. I didn't want his brain to get, you know, broken in half.
I wonder, I don't know what they're going to do with that. Clearly, like, he becomes, like, completely disconnected from human reality.
Right,
he's, like,
right.
Something is happening where it seems like he's connected to whatever communication patterns or whatever space things are happening. I don't fucking science stuff.
Science.
Like,
whatever their bullshit
explanation is. I don't know. So, like, that could be interesting. We'll see how it goes. It's sad. I was genuinely sad. Like, I did really want that sort of happy ending for them, although clearly that wasn't gonna happen. Like, we all knew it.
No. And I love that you had a real human reaction to that. I'm so dead inside that it just reminded me of, like, bad cop movies where, like, the cop who's, you know, one day from retirement is like, oh, can't wait to go home and kiss my wife. This I just got to get through one more day, you know? And you know that he's going to get shot up and he's not going to make it, you know? It's like the jeweler's like, ah, one last heist. And then I get to go live on an island. You knew that dude wasn't going to make it.
I know. I was just kind of, okay, so Tyler and Burnham are on the Klingon ship, right?
Mm-hmm.
So can we talk more science talk?
Yeah.
These pattern simulators will block our human life signs.
Listen, they come up with, you know, hand-wavy scientific explanations for everything. In a way, I kind of appreciated it because I was thinking, like, so y'all are just going to, you know, beam over and no one's going to know, even though you're leaving these giant, these giant towers of uplink, you know, around the place.
But so they did. They used this in a previous episode when Lorca and what's his face was on the Klingon ship, right? Mm-hmm. Where they looked like. No, wait, holy crap. I'm thinking of the Orville. Oh, my God.
Oh, Anita.
Wow.
Anita.
I totally just confused the shows. Okay, they did the same thing on that show where you can, like, where you pretend, like, other people will think that you're their race. But,
right.
Like, this doesn't happen in any other Star Trek, does it? Someone at me at Anita Sarkeesian, because I don't think that this is a technology that's used beyond this.
Yeah, I don't recall it ever being used before.
So there's a moment when they first get on the ship where Tyler says to Burnham, you have 30 seconds to crack that because, oh, sorry, it's context. Burnham's like, I see another life sign. We need to go, like, we need to rescue them. And Tyler's like, oh, I guess, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to, like, get into this room. And Tyler says, you have 30 seconds to crack that. 2 seconds later, he goes, let me try.
Yeah.
Right? And then he tears the goddamn, like, in like a punch pad thing. He tears it apart.
Yeah, and he says, like, you know, remember, I was prisoner here for 7 months.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Like, was that a joke? Was that supposed to be funny?
I think it was supposed
to be. Stupid.
I think it was supposed to be.
I was really happy to see the Admiral. That was another moment that I enjoyed in this episode. I was like, oh, she's not dead. Like, which obviously, like, they did leave it questionable. It doesn't make any sense that she's not dead because, like.
Right.
Like, how are they feeding her? Like, she was passed out for days? And, like, what? No, it didn't make any sense, but I still was relieved because I actually like her.
Yeah, me too. Has she been in that room with Laurel smelling cooking Klingon for just days?
I mean, I don't, they didn't explain how she's still alive, so maybe.
Yeah.
This show. But whatever, she's alive. I liked her a lot, and I'm glad she's alive. And I'm glad that it it throws a kink in Lorca's bullshit, but also, like, I'm worried about what, because we obviously, like, the show sides with Lorca a lot of the time, and, like, you know, ultimately we believe that his stuff, that, like, his deceptive things are of benefit, and we're supposed to agree with that, like, hesitantly agree with that as the viewer, so I'm worried what they're going to do with her, but whatever, I'm glad she's back.
Right. Yeah, me too.
Okay, I want to actually
Let's talk about Tyler.
Well, hold on. Can we talk about I want to actually dive into the PTSD stuff a little bit. So just to, like, wrap up the Klingon nonsense. You know, like, so Burnham, all of a sudden, it does not look like a Klingon anymore. And she, like, challenges Cole. She's like, I challenge you to a duel, right? To try to stall. Okay, there is no fucking way that she knows that that was Giorgio's comms badge. Like, there is no way she could see that. Come on, y'all.
No. Well, I guess Cole had said, you know, this came from that ship or something. Like, I thought he had, like, gestured towards where he
got. I don't remember that. I remember seeing, like, a flash of it as a, like, they showed it near the beginning, and you don't really know what it is. You just think it's a comms badge. I thought it was the Admiral's badge, actually.
Yeah, me too.
And
me too,
I actually thought when they said that they're human life signs, I was like, are they just recognizing the comms badge somehow?
Yeah.
But anyways, so whatever. Just another stupid thing about the show. And so, like, she's, like, dueling him, and then all of a sudden she, like, what fucking ever. I was so thankful that Tyler does not come running in to save her, though. There was that moment where Cole was choking her, and I was like, oh, God, please, God, don't let him come in and, like, rescue her in this very moment.
Me too. And, I mean, obviously, what comes immediately after that explains, you know, why he hasn't been, but from the time that Burnham and Tyler, you know, concoct this plan to beam over to the Klingon ship, I was like, Burnham is so much more assertive about what needs to happen here and about stepping forward. I'm like, she's a way better security chief than Tyler is, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she's just much more fearless, you know, much more bold and decisive. Like, he just seems to hang back. And I'm like, dude, I get, you know, the reasons why you're reacting in the way that you are. But that just shows Lorca should not have put someone who just came out of 7 months of torture into the position of security chief on a starship.
Dude, for
like,
real.
Like, this just makes no sense.
I know.
I mean, that's a serious dereliction of duty. That doesn't serve Tyler. It doesn't serve the ship. Like, you would never do something like that.
Right. Well, and so, okay. So now that I did that one little bit about the badges that nobody cares about for me. Okay, let's talk about the PTSD stuff, because I'm both like appreciative and also fucking angry about the way that they deal with this. So
yes,
Tyler walks into that room and sees the, what is her name? Why do I always forget her name?
Laurel.
Sees Laurel and like goes into massive shock, right? He's super triggered.
Right.
He like is having a massive flashback and whatever. So there's a little bit of like, I was actually really frustrated because I'm like, this is super interesting. He was obviously tortured for months. He obviously has PTSD. The show has completely ignored that, has not referenced it even a fucking tiny bit. And all of a sudden he's like, he's in such shock that he's paralyzed. Like he's functionally totally useless at that moment. And it felt a little like, I was just like, are you like, fuck off a little bit, right? Yeah. Like, you're, there's no way that throughout the last several months that he was on Discovery, he didn't have moments of being triggered, because you don't only get, like, if you have PTSD, you are not only triggered by, like, the exact events or the exact people that caused your trauma.
Right.
You get triggered by the weirdest shit, right? Like, anyone, any of us who suffer from PTSD or, like, or suffer from trauma will tell you that, like, you are set off by things that might not even make much sense. And so that was, I felt, a fundamental misrepresentation of how that works. They sort of, at the end of it, are talking about how he has these horrible nightmares and like he's just been hiding it. And like, I appreciated that conversation. And I actually thought that conversation was really good until he says, if none of that happened, I wouldn't be here on the ship with you. It almost makes it worth it.
I was so mad.
I was so yelling. Mad. And then he says, is that weird? Yeah. And I screamed, yes, that's fucking weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I would never presume to map out how a victim of trauma should respond.
Sure.
And I think, you know, we do a disservice to victims when we say like, oh, you don't seem upset because you did do this or because you said this or whatever, right? But nevertheless, I found that to be such a gross moment after what had been, I thought, a really tough reckoning with what it means to be a survivor. And I was really like, when we start to see, you know, the way that Tyler is like just completely you know, having almost like an out of body experience, you know, as he tries to deal with this, I was like, wow, I didn't think Star Trek Discovery was capable of this. I thought it was wonderful as a terrible word to use, but I just thought it was so important that they show the way men have to try and deal with like bodily trauma and assault, particularly sexual assault.
Yeah.
You know, like I think that's a very brave thing to do. So to make it, I don't know, to essentially take all of that back by saying, but if I hadn't gone through that, I wouldn't be here with you now. Kiss, kiss, kiss. I was just like, oh, that's the worst.
Yeah.
That is the worst way you could have dealt with this.
Well, and he also like snapped out of it. I say that sort of like mockingly, by memories of Burnham, by memories of kissing her. And I was like, that is not how this shit works, right? Like,
if
every PTSD survivor was like healed by love, like, a lot of them would be fine, right? Like, that's just, that's not the way that depression and trauma and all of these elements work. And so, I'm just so frustrated because I like that they're talking about this. I like that they're going this direction. I think it's, what you're saying, it's really interesting that they're showing a male survivor of sexual assault. I'm a little bit torn about that because, like, we do not talk about that as a society very much. And I think that it's really dismissive and of like the lived realities of a lot of men. But I'm also always torn because I don't think that our media is smart enough to be able to deal with that. Take on such an important conversation in what is ostensibly like a pretty shit show when it comes to politics and this sort of thing. And also, you know, I don't want it to in any way undermine the fact that, like, statistically, women are so much higher, like, I have such a higher experience of assault as well, right? Like, what the fuck am I trying to say? That, like, statistically, more women are assaulted than men, and statistically, men are assaulted by other men, right? Not by other women. Not everyone, not every case, but just, like, big sweeping picture statistics. So there's a little bit of, like, I don't want to erase the reality of what is happening in this space in real life, and also mm-hmm. like how are they going to deal with this? Mm-hmm. Are they going to be respectful? Well, like,
right. Well, it's Discovery, so you know, fingers crossed. But what I guess what I appreciated about it was the way, and we can talk about whether we read this the same way. But I think for male victims in particular, when they are the victims of sexual assault, there's this way in which we refuse to believe them because we assume that any guy is going to be so happy to have sex at any point. Mm-hmm. There's no way that there could be like power differentials, that they could be coerced, you know? So to have Tyler continue to emphasize, like, I was trying to stay alive. I was trying. And so I had to do what I thought I had to do to stay alive, that this is not like, oh, well, I'll just, you know, lie back and think of England and, you know, like this hot Klingon babe wants to get it on with me. So, you know, he wasn't feeling guilty because he ultimately enjoyed it. So I appreciated that. But
I
also,
too.
Real
Absolutely.
Quick, I was not ready for, nor do I appreciate the Klingon boobs that
Where
we
were the Klingon boobs?
You didn't, girl, in one of Burnham's or Tyler's flashbacks, when, you know, it's like this sweaty, soft focus, you know, you can't really tell what's going on, clearly it's like the actual assault. And then, and we see Laurel's boobs.
Oh, I don't remember that. Well, I mean, I remember the scene. I don't remember seeing boobs mm-hmm. though. Okay.
I know I'm not the only one. I didn't imagine them. And I was like, this was unnecessary. Yeah. This was real unnecessary.
Okay, what was that deal at the end? He goes to see her, and she says, mm-hmm. soon. And I was like, oh, my God, Ebony's right. Oh, my God, she's right.
Oh, yeah,
totally
I'm right. I'm
going
to tell you. I'm going to tell you right now what it's going to be, okay? And I'm going to shout out to, I want to say it was, let me check here, Winter Chill on Twitter posted a link to a write-up about the Tyler conspiracy theory, and I feel vindicated because other nerds have been talking about this. But here's what I'm gonna tell you what it was. Ash Tyler, the real Ash Tyler, was a Klingon prisoner, and somehow Laurel's dude, whose name I'm blanking on, the Klingon, got brain swapped into his body. No, Takuvma was the one who died. He was the Messiah figure.
Right,
but, you know, like his protege, dude, they found some way to put his brain patterns into Ash Tyler. I'm going to tell you right now, that's what it is. And so, you know, Laurel is like, I know that on the inside, you're my dude. I would never let anything happen to you. Soon, we're going to, you know, get you back into your own body, whatever. But I'm guarantee you, for a while, I thought it was that Tyler had gone through, like, extensive surgery, you know? And they, like, created this figure of Ash Tyler. But I was like, how could they have invented a whole backstory that wouldn't have rung any alarm bells? It's because there actually was an Ash Tyler. They simply put, you know, Takuvma's protege's brain patterns in there. I'm talking such nonsense, but I guarantee you that's what it is.
Yeah. So
I will be vindicated.
Hey, Ebony, do you mm-hmm. also, do you wear a tinfoil hat when you're watching these episodes?
Not while I'm wearing it. I don't need it inside.
That was some deep conspiracy shit,
but
they're obviously
when it comes to that. Listen, I could write this show.
They're obviously,
you know,
nodding,
in my sleep.
They're obviously nodding to somebody. Like they're. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Oh God, what am I saying? They're obviously nodding towards something, right? That they did something to him, and so mm-hmm. you know, like it's not unreasonable for us to go off on like wild conspiracy theories trying to figure out mm-hmm. what that something might be. But I'm just gonna wait and see what happens.
Okay, well, you know,
yeah.
if you don't want to get on board,
I'm gonna wait. I'll let you be out there on a limb by yourself, there, buddy.
You know what? That's okay because I love myself and I know I'm right.
So I got a message. My dumbass didn't paste the name of the Twitter user, so I'm really sorry. Mm-hmm. But they were asking us if we watched the after show.
That was Joe Groves.
Oh, great. Thank you. And mm-hmm. but so the reason I bring it up is because they said that they feel like Stamets that the Stamets character is being played in the same way as Voyager's Doctor, which I was like, what? The Doctor is one of the the Doctor on Voyager is fucking awesome. Like, I really, really mm-hmm. love him. Mm-hmm. Great actor. Great character. And I was I'm sitting. I've been like kind of working through this in my head a little bit, being like, wait, what? How could you possibly make that comparison? And I think that if that is the case, then that's why this character is utterly failing me, because the Doctor is a hologram. Right. Like the context for Voyager's Doctor and being as like closed off and kind of like, you know, not quite understanding human interaction. Like that's part of the charm of the Doctor, and watching him learn how to like be like, well, I'm the only one on the ship now that can do this. And I'm not even like medically equipped for it. Stamets is an engineer. He's a human. Like it doesn't make as much sense to me. So like that might be part of why I'm struggle with like the choices, the acting choices made with this character.
Anything Voyager related, I gotta bow out.
Yeah, I know. But so there you go. That's my thought on that. Like I just don't see it. And I suspect we're not gonna see much more of that, because I'm assuming at least the next six episodes is gonna be Stamets is gonna be like, they're gonna be grappling with what has happened to him. I don't think he's going to be playing his normal, you know, his normal self. So
there's going to be a lot more Stamets, even more Stamets, after the fall break. And I'm going to need some time to gird my loins and get ready for that.
All right. You got anything else?
Hair report for this week.
Oh yeah. And song. Why do I always forget?
Yeah, because you want to. Hair report. Week by week, I'm uncertain what they're doing with Burnham's hair. I'm more and more convinced that what she's wearing is a very full, natural hair lace front. And the reason I say that is because of the baby hairs around the hairline. Someone back me up here. I'm convinced that that's just a very good lace front, but it's not sitting right with me. Probably because it's not sitting right on her. So my hair report for the week is... That's the grade.
Fair. I just made a note to myself to Google lace front.
Anita, Marie, Sarkeesian. We need to have some conversations before the recording of this show.
I love that you make up random middle names for me.
Listen, Belinda. I'm just trying to tell you, while you're Googling lace front, Google baby hairs, okay? Because otherwise you're not going to understand what I'm talking about.
I got baby hairs.
Let me see.
Will this solve my baby hair problem?
No.
Oh, damn.
Unless you get some, you know, some gel and a little toothbrush to lay those things down.
Nah.
Let's just not even get started. I'm going through my notes. I think we've covered everything. So the last thing is Ebony's theme song for the week.
Mm-hmm. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
No, are you ready?
I'm okay. So ready.
Okay. Are the people ready?
The people are probably not ready.
Okay, here we go. Show's done for the fall. Thank God, couldn't take no more.
Yeah,
yeah.
I concur with these emotions. Yeah. We will be back on January 7th when the new or the fucking whatever the last half of the first season, whatever nonsense that they're doing with this thing, comes back. We will be here. We will miss you for the month or so that we have off.
Except we won't have it off because we've got something new.
That's true.
To enjoy.
So
you should hop on over to that.
Yeah. So on Wednesday, we will be launching Feminist Frequency Radio, which will be more of this, but with Carolyn and other topics. And it's going to be awesome. If you Google Feminist Frequency Radio, or not Google, I mean, you could Google it, but on any of your... on any of the podcast hosts that you use, just look up Feminist Frequency Radio and you can subscribe to us right now. There's a teaser, Jesus Christ. There's a teaser out.
Oh, boy.
We're about to record that episode. We're gonna be real fun. I can't say words.
It's going to be the same quality content.
Yeah.
Accustomed to.
We are super excited about that, so please check it out. We released a couple Freak Show episodes that I just want to plug really quick, too. We released one this week, or last week, actually, about what to do when creators that you love, like what to do with the work of creators that you love when we find out that they are abusive and predatory. Because I think I have those conversations often. I think that my relationship to media created by people like Louis C.K. or Woody Allen, who I always hated, so that wasn't so hard to give up. But
right.
Yeah. What do we do with that? And so, you know, you can find that at feministfrequency.com. You can find me at Anita Sarkeesian on Twitter. You can find Ebony at Ebony Astor. And, you know, thanks for all the... Oh, I got a sloth gif today. That was really nice.
Oh, I should put out a request for cool gifs, but I don't know. The people that follow me, I don't know if they would deliver.
Try.
You know what I'm saying?
Well,
like they might try and surprise me with some craziness. Don't nobody send me anything about mayonnaise. But yeah, hit me up with some cool.
Well,
gifts.
There was a serious mayonnaise conversation that happened on Twitter after this.
I know.
Look,
and you know what? To be honest, I'm still dealing with it emotionally.
Whatever. Well, I really wish you could see what happened to Ebony's body when she made that noise.
full body cringe.
Oh, all right, y'all.
Okay.
We'll see you back in January. Check out our other podcast.
Bye, folks.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.